Carpe Diem Living, the podcast by Shane Gitmed, dives into the amazing realm of holistic medicine and natural healing methods that is known to be life-changing. She was once someone who struggled with chronic illnesses, severe allergies, and countless other diagnoses from doctors that she thought would never improve or be stuck with for life. She is here to share that through holistic and functional medicine, there are cures that do not require medication and hope that the body can heal. Her passion for finding answers through natural healing methods and herbs lead her to wanting to speak to experts in this field and speaking to those who found healing through holistic medicine. Here's your host, Shane Gitmed.
There's a lot of things, do's and don'ts, that you must know to be successful in dating. It is an art and a science. We do use psychology, but the very first thing you got to know is you've got to love yourself first. You've got to feel amazing about your life. You have to clean up all that in the life coaching part. Then you get the skills about dating. Then you go out and date. Too many people are dating unprepared. They're looking for people to save them, rescue them. They're lonely. They have bills. They have debt. Wrong time to date, you're going to get somebody who's very toxic. So when you have your life together, and what this is what we call be, what you want to attract. So don't go out there needy and desperate. When you have your life together and you're very confident, you're not going to be attracted to someone needy and desperate or has debt. You would never stand for that. So that's how our people go out dating. They have more than enough choices.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Carpe Diem Living, the podcast. I am your host, Shane Gitmed, and today we're speaking with Rihanna Milne, who's located in Florida, somewhere where a state that I love. I've been to countless times, and as you can see with her background, by the beach. So, Rihanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Shane, and hi, everyone. Hope we can be helpful for you today.
Absolutely. And Rihanna is a life and love trauma recovery coach. So she has so much information that I'm so excited that we get to share with you all. And she has a lot of books. She has her own podcast. And so, yeah, I'm just ready to dive in. So Rihanna, I know you talk about the top 10 traumas that we experience in our life. So why don't we go ahead? You can start with telling us a little bit about your background and what those are.
Okay. Well, my background was fairly traditional. I went back to school for a triple master's in applied clinical and counseling psychology back when I was about 40 years old. And that was year 2000. I opened up my first private practice, Therapy by the Sea. But as I was growing my practice, I took on a lot of other jobs. I was a single mom. So I worked in a hospital setting in a child and adolescent unit, ages 5 to 19. I worked in every school grade from kindergarten all the way through college as a SAC, which is a student assistance counselor helping kids in trauma or emotional upset. And then I was also LCADC, licensed certified drug and alcohol addictions counselor. So I worked in an addiction center for teens and one for women in the prison system. So all my work, whether in my private practice or outside in these other entities, we're dealing with different people, different ages, men, women, different cultures and backgrounds, but the same trauma situation kept coming up. And it all reverted back to childhood trauma. And I really didn't put the correlations together. And I developed my childhood trauma checklist later, years down the road, once I was involved with a love trauma situation. So I was married to someone I dearly loved who turned out to have a secret life, which we call a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde personality. Dr. Jekyll to this society is well loved, respected, smart, fun, intelligent. And we really had a fun, beautiful relationship. But then he had a secret life, like a split personality that exploded on him first at school. And then, of course, it had damaged our marriage, my trust. the trust of our children and everything else. So the first step I took was to empower myself and stand up as my own attorney. And I won an annulment, which I understand is quite rare to get. And then the second part, just talking with all my psychotherapy friends, nobody knew what he had. It was not in our manual called the DSM-4. And the last thing he said to me, he goes, I don't know what's the matter with me. I sabotage everything I love. And I said, I don't either, but I need to figure it out. And I needed to figure it out for my own healing and my own disbelief. Like, what is this? I wouldn't call it schizophrenia. It's just something different that I never learned, nor did any other therapist in the master's programs back then. So I started the research. And I uncovered that he had 9 out of the top 10 childhood traumas that I kept seeing over and over with people who had traumatic lives. And I do assess the severity levels from 1 to 10, with 10 being the most severe. So he had levels of 9 and 10. So this is where his problems kept coming in. And at that level, that's sociopathic, someone who uses another for pleasure, profit, or lifestyle advancement. And they could become quite good at being the Dr. Jekyll and hiding the Mr. Hyde. Okay, so that's a sociopathic lifestyle. And when I developed this, I know there are more than 10 traumas, but these are the top 10. And as I go into them for our listeners, I just want you to know that the research shows that 9 out of 10 people have at least 1 to 3 of these. And trauma goes through at least 3 generations. So if you recognize that you have trauma, definitely your mom and dad will have trauma and their parents. So it definitely goes through the generations. Okay. And the first thing for transformation and change is understanding. You can't change what you don't understand or acknowledge. So I was at that beginning of the curve as I don't know what I don't know. And this is frustrating. I got to figure out the answer. So this is the beginning of the journey for healing for my clients. Okay. And then I do the mindset for success as a certified mindset coach. And we teach them to heal the unconscious behavior patterns and make them consciously aware so they think about everything they do, say, how they act, and everything else. Okay, so this is the first step. So as a young person, a child or a teen, did you have parents or caretakers, the first one is, that had any addiction? So there is drugs or alcohol, sex, meaning you knew your parent was cheating, but you held the secret, porn use, gambling, hoarding, spending, eating, gaming, TV watching, workaholism, and the last one, social media addiction. Any of these addictions could have stood in the way of the parent-child bond. The second one is verbal abuse or trauma. So that could have been watching your parents yelling and screaming and fighting all the time, or them yelling at you. This also includes never hearing the words, I love you. It also means hearing a lot of verbal put downs, like you'll amount to nothing, or you look fat in that outfit, go change your clothes. You know, these slight put downs, they think they're doing you a favor, but you know, it really hurts who you are. So these verbal messages are very important. The third one is emotional abuse and neglect. The fourth one is abandonment. And I described 2 types of abandonment because I clearly saw 2 types and they played out differently in the people I worked with. So there's no fault abandonment, which you, the parents, it's not their fault that this abandonment has occurred. So the first one is if a parent dies early. Second one is if they've gone off to war to serve their country. Another one is if a parent works away from the home and has to travel a lot. That's how they're supporting their family. But there's a lot of, you know, abandonment feelings from the kids. Fault abandonment is different. You could have controlled these types of things. The first one is never being involved in your child's life. Second is being involved until the couple broke up or divorced. Then you're barely there. And the third one would be an emotional type of abandonment. So the parent is still there in the home, but rarely interacts. They don't go to the school, your football games or your art shows or any of your activities. I know as a therapist, I used to have teens all the time come in and it's like, I don't know why I have to go to my dad's house for custody. He barely talks to me. So he ends up in his room on his computer, dad's in front of the TV all weekend watching football. So this is a type of emotional abandonment that really hurts kids more than parents realize. Okay, then the next one is if you were part of the foster care system, if you were adopted, or you had to leave your home, whether you lost your home or had to go live with other friends or grandparents or aunts for some reason, just being displaced is number six. Trauma number seven, a lot of people can identify with. This is personal trauma. This is remembering feeling different or that you didn't fit in. Many people can relate to this because this could be a heavy, overweight child. You were skinny and gawky and called the nerd. You might have had a medical issue or diagnosed ADHD. And I worked with those kids and they hated being pulled out of the classroom feeling different or labeled. It could be an ethnic or cultural thing. The only African American girl in an all Caucasian school, you felt different, you were picked on. Could have been our LGBTQ teens and kids feeling different. Their identity didn't match what they're supposed to be. So you can see how many people could possibly relate to trauma number seven. Trauma number eight is sibling trauma. This could have been your sibling bullied you. They were born with a medical issue and therefore mom and dad gave them more time and attention. But most often people can see that this one relates to if they were the golden child or the favored one. So the smarter child, the more handsome or beautiful, or the star athlete, for some reason, mom or dad gave them more time and attention. Trauma number nine has two parts. And the one everyone in our world is experiencing right now. So someone says they never had trauma, you have this one. And this is community trauma, and we're all enduring the backlash of the COVID pandemic, right? So anything that affects the community at large. This is also our mass shootings, our school shootings, our Mother Nature events of floods, fires, hurricanes, mudslides that wipe out or really impact communities at large. And these are getting more and more rampant as the years go on. We do have to watch out for our young people in 8 to 10 years when they're young adults and they went through this lack of safety, fear of death situation with all these messages on our news, on our television about COVID and COVID deaths. So that's going to play a toll in future years. And then the community impacts the family. So let's say someone loses their job from COVID. Now this is impacting the family. They may not have enough money for their heat bills to keep their home. They might be in food lines. But even before COVID, this could be growing up in a dangerous neighborhood or hearing a lot of lack messages. We don't have enough money for this or that. It could be our military families here in the US. They move every 2 to 4 years. This puts their kids in new schools all the time, again, being the new kid. It could be a parent incarcerated. So there's many different ways that family and community are impacted. And then trauma number 10 is mental health issues in the parents. The two most difficult for children to deal with is bipolar and borderline personality disorder. Borderline, I simply describe as erratic moods. When they're good, they're great. When they're bad, they're horrid. And they will lash out and get angry at the simplest thing that nobody else would get mad at. So this leaves a child very anxious, not really knowing how to navigate that parent's moods. And then bipolar is manic depressive. Depression can come out as fatigue, checking out emotionally, or even anger. And a manic phase could be high and happy, but very often it's tied to an addiction, like a gambling spree, a spending spree, an eating binge, something like that. So those are the top 10 traumas and that are impacting us as adults in life and love when they're not healed and they're unconscious.
Wow. You know, when you were going through that list, like my light bulbs are going off in my head, like, oh, I definitely know about that. Or I know someone that's dealt with that, or I've seen a show based off of that. It's just so crazy. Yeah. Like when you dive deep into each level of where, you know, who has experienced this. And it's really unfortunate because a lot of people don't realize that, yes, if they aren't aware of their background like that, then they don't know how it's affecting them now as an adult. So
yeah, what's happening is as a child, again, they have this immature mind, but they develop coping strategies and mechanisms that seem to make them survive their environment. Right now, kids are either internalizers or externalizers. So like the kids I saw in the mental health unit at the hospital. These were more critically fragile kids. So the externalizers would be the runaways, the angry, the defiant, the screaming back at their parents, using drugs or alcohol, having risky sex. The internalizers are the quiet, depressed ones, sitting in their room, isolating. They could be cutting, self-mutilating, or doing eating disorders, eating and binging behaviors. So it really depends. But if you see signs like this in your teens, you definitely want to get them help as soon as possible.
And I'm no stranger to childhood trauma. And definitely for me as a mom and a single mom, it's definitely something more that I am, not that I'm afraid of, but I really want to pay attention to, just because the trauma of that you mentioned, if their parent was in the military and the constant moving, that's something I would have had to deal with had we stayed part of a military life. So that's, I'm very thankful that's not part of it, because
you know what that's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know people that we call it like army brats. That's like one term we've used internally. But yeah, when they're an army brat, usually they have that issue of like adapting to different places and just overall there's no stability. And so that can really affect someone, especially a child.
Yeah. You know, other people that grow up in the same school, they have those childhood friends throughout life. You know, it's hard to bond and then you have to leave and then you bond and then you have to leave. So there could be some abandonment in those kids as well, that they don't have that solid friendship or know how to make that solid friendship because of all the moves.
Right, right. So since we're talking about childhood traumas, how does that hold a person back in their relationships as adults or as they're growing up?
Well, many of these behaviors become norms or normalized, and they don't really realize that they're doing anything wrong. And I'll give you a brief story, then I'll go into some. I had a couple in my practice here in Delray Beach, Florida. The man was from the Midwest and a calm, peaceful farming family, moved very slow, and he married a woman from South Philly. Now, I'm from Philadelphia. And she was an Italian woman. And I know I have a lot of South Philly friends. So they talk very fast, very loud, very impassioned, very dramatic. And that's just who they are. That's how they grew up. That was normal for her. So he goes, the reason I'm here is because she yells at me all the time. And she looks at him, what do you mean? I never yell at you. And I looked at her, I said, you don't hear it, do you? You know, and it was loud for me. And I know I talked a little fast when I first moved down here, and I purposely had to slow down my conversation. So these cultural norms, area norms of where we live, everything has to be looked at. That's just one example. But other ways it shows up. For women, there's a lot of people pleasing that I see. They overdo for the difficult parents so they would get punished or yelled at. They've learned that they don't say no. They keep overdoing. They do what people ask of them. And it makes them angry and resentful and burn out. Another one is perfectionism. People that came from chaotic backgrounds like a lot of control in their life. Now, this could work well in the workplace. And I have a lot of clients successful in business, but struggle in love. So if they're controlling and they're doing well in business, that can work out. But as soon as you start nitpicking and controlling your partner, especially a woman doing that to a man, it erodes his self-esteem. He gets pissed off. So he might take off. He might have an affair behind her back with someone not as powerful or successful as her, someone that more idolizes him. Right? Because she doesn't make him feel good enough. Trauma number 7, not feeling good enough personally, can add and lend to a lot of jealousy as well as control. People who date someone that lies all the time. It's like, why do you lie all the time? Well, that might have been a coping mechanism. If a young boy came home and his father was an alcoholic, he didn't know if he was going to get beat that day. So if he was late, you go, why are you late? You made up a lie while I was with the tutor. And he said, wow, I got away with that. So lying works. I didn't get hit today. You know, so lying is his salvation. And then it just becomes so automatic. Manipulation and charm, same thing, comes from the same thing. Or it could be a student that fails and struggles in school, but he learns to charm his teacher. Or he could be the class clown using humor to have people like him, even though, you know, he may be very sad inside. Abandonment issues, that goes towards codependent relationships, and love addiction. Love addiction shows up in what we call relationship repetition syndrome. That's like you're together and it's toxic and you break up. Then you get back together and you break up. And the average of this breakup cycle is 7 times. And it's bizarre because the healthier person would say, I know he's no good for me. The conscious awareness is saying, I know he's so not good for me. But the unconscious is so drawn to craving love, even though it was toxic love. And, you know, maybe 70% of the time it was bad, but they're living for that 30% or how it was in the beginning. Right. So the charmer, the manipulator, the sociopath is always great in the beginning. And this is what's so deceptive about these relationships. They look like the ideal partner. Why they rope you in, but they will move fast. They will tell you fast that I love you. Let's get married early. And then the toxic behavior patterns start showing up month 4 through month 9, or when the couple gets more serious. So when they move in together, get engaged, married, or have a child, these are landmark times where some triggering could be going on emotionally and the moods change or the reactions change. You might see some addiction behavior, drinking more, smoking more pot, just escapism when they are emotionally triggered, if they can't handle it.
These are all great tips, especially when I start dating. Because I'm telling you, like, it's so hard when I follow a lot of Instagram accounts for, like, you know, psychologists and holistic leaders. And a lot of it is like, you know, what red flags to look out for and like things like that. But sometimes it's, especially when you want things to work, you almost have like tunnel vision where you are just focused on certain aspects versus the whole picture.
And this is the problem, especially in the USA. We were brought up to find out about love through romance movies, novels, and fairy tales, like Sleeping Beauty. She lays down, the handsome prince comes and kisses her, and they go away happily ever after, right? You know, so it was all about chemistry. If there's attraction, you're going to be happy ever after. And these are usually the most toxic relationships. And the problem is what's going on is the soul or the psyche of the brain, the old brain, likes what's normal, what it knows, what it's used to. So they are very much attracted to the parent type. And, you know, this is the cycle of the woman saying, I never would have chosen an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic. How did I end up with this? And that's why, right? So this is why I always say it's so dangerous to fall in love by chemistry, and that you have to know the real substance of someone. And that takes time, especially time testing beyond that 90-day romance period. You want to move slow. You don't want to fall in love fast. You don't want to be intimate fast, because if it's chemistry and the substance not there, the icing on the cake just melts. It just doesn't last. So you have to make sure you're falling in love with the real character of the person. Yes, there has to be an attraction factor for sure, but don't let chemistry be the only thing and you be lust blinded into a toxic relationship.
Right. I just had a question. So if someone were to have been in that type of, you know, situation, is it possible to, I mean, even though say you recognize all of these signs, is it possible to come out on top if the relationship did start from that standpoint of, you know, attraction? Is it salvageable? Like, is it possible to be successful?
Well, I see both singles and couples and straight and LGBTQ and men and women. So I get them at all stages of relationships. If I have a couple trying to save their marriage and they're both emotionally invested because they have 2 little children, that's a couple that will usually be highly successful because they both really want to fix what's wrong. They're usually stuck in that toxic cycle I'm referring to. And when I have someone like that, I'm fixing or helping them 3 ways. Partner A, partner B, and the relationship dynamic. So I have to heal the childhood trauma of A, B, and then all those interactions and reactions and those words that are destroying the relationship. So it's a whole new way to communicate once you understand what your partner's traumas are and what their emotional triggers are. So that's one scenario. I often have someone coming from a coupled relationship, like right now, I have a gentleman with me and his wife did not want to do coaching. She goes, well, we're with a couples counselor. I want to stay with them. She picked that person out. And he's there, well, we've been there over a year and I'm ready to walk out the door. So obviously it's not working for me. So he signed up to work with me. And I said, well, one of two things are going to happen. You're going to really like who you are. You're going to get your best self back. She's going to be reattracted and your marriage will work. Or she's going to be stubborn and not bend, and you're going to be so ready to go out and have an emotionally healthy relationship. So either way, you win, and we won't know until time goes on. So when I change one part of the relationship, the other part often changes. And what normally happens is that second partner that was reluctant says, oh my God, he's looking good. He's confident. He's smiling all the time. He's doing great in business. I'm going to lose him. So then she's on board. You see, so if you change nothing, nothing changes. So at least one person of the relationship needs to go get help. Then I have singles, not sure, should I stay, should I go? If they come to me as a single, they sign up for the singles program, and I don't say you have to break up with this person. I clearly see they're toxic. I will say I'm seeing a lot of signs that really concern me about toxic behavior, but let's get you started and you will come to the decisions yourself whether to stay or go, and you'll know exactly why. So then I empower this person, teach them the skills. It's 50% life skills, 50% relationship dating skills. And usually within the second to third session, they're like, whoa, I love what I'm learning. I lost myself in this relationship. I put on all this weight because he's controlling me and telling me what to wear and I can't wear. So once she or he starts getting themselves back to feeling amazing about who they are, very often they don't want to stay with that partner, the single. So they will break up and move on. We'll have a breakup plan. And then they learn what is emotionally healthy love look like, and how to date with full conscious awareness, not just fall for that cute guy or girl because of chemistry. They know exactly what they're looking for and why, you know, either continue to date that person or not date anymore. So it's a very different and empowered way to date. And then I get the people out of the long-term marriage, had two boyfriends, all toxic, and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Why am I attracting these people? I'm tired of it. Or they're afraid to date after a horrible marriage. So I get all different types of people, and then all their issues are very individualized depending on what was their traumas as kids, how is it showing up as an adult, where is their severity level. So it's very individualized work. I call it like a puzzle piece. And my programs have 150-page workbook, all from research. So they answer the test, like one of them is the childhood trauma checklist. So from there, I can go on and help and guide them by what shows up. So all the worksheets are like this.
I love all the resources you've created for your clients. And because I know, because there's a lot of people in my life that have never gone to therapy, even though they could definitely use it, especially if they've got their childhood trauma checklist is like almost all of them. Sorry, yeah. I know I have a lot of amazing people in my life, but some people can be just be so stubborn when it comes to healing and wanting to come to the root of the problem. Like sometimes they just don't want to deal with it, I guess. It's hard to face it.
Or they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to calm that reactive mind. I describe it by living in the dark side or living in the light side. Most people, according to research, have 8 out of 10 thoughts are negative, fear-based thoughts. We switch that, and that's unconscious. We switch it to conscious awareness. This is the proactive side. The dark side is the reactive side. It's the uneducated side. This is the educated side. So it takes a while. As a certified clinical trauma professional, all my trauma education says it takes about 6 months to really change the brain and the body where trauma is stored. But it is amazing when it happens, and their life changes in all areas. So not only about how they feel about themselves or confidence in their self-esteem, but also their relationships, their success in business, where before they might have been afraid to go for something or spend money on a coach. They learn to say yes to themselves. If I make this investment, I know I can do better. And they're charged up about it. You know, so many people are afraid to say yes to themselves because why? The lack messages that they grew up with. They're not good enough. They're not worthy enough. So we have to change all of that. And once that happens, their life is just amazing. And it's all holistically, mind, body, spirit. It is a very spiritually based course. I do vitamin therapy. None of my people are on psychotropic drugs or medications like anti-anxieties, antidepressants. No, none of them. They may come to me on them. We wean them off. They don't need them. The mindset is a very strong and powerful thing. And I've been teaching mindset for success since my 20s to my models and actors who wanted to make it in the large market. So yeah, from Erie, PA. It's a very small town, blue collar town. It's like, I want to make it in New York or LA. And it's like, let's go. Let's do it. So that was all mindset to convince them that yes, with skills, they can do whatever they dream to do. So I've been teaching this type of work for a very long time, 40 years now.
Oh my gosh. So, yep. You're definitely an expert. I love
and
that.
And everything. And it's very important work to do with trauma healing.
Absolutely. I just have another question for you. If someone were to, let's say they've been to therapy when they were younger or maybe like 10 years ago, and they have worked on childhood trauma, but things come up, you know, in life, triggers can come up, different relationships can bring up those old feelings. Would a tune-up be very helpful if, say, they already kind of dealt with it, but then it surfaced back up? Would your program be suitable for that?
Absolutely. Because if they're still getting triggered as an adult, then the trauma response system has not been worked with. You can talk about this happened to me, blah, 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 blah. That's just talking, but it's not healing. I mean, that's very important. If you're still being triggered, a lot of people are being triggered right now during COVID. They don't feel safe. They didn't maybe not feel safe as a kid. All these fear-based messages. Oh my God, will there be enough vaccine? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, personally, I don't even want it. It's a gene protocol. I don't believe in that vaccine because it's not a vaccine. Only Johnson & Johnson's is. So, I mean, you know, be educated, be calm, make a sound decision, be consciously aware about what you're putting into your body and why. You know, instead do vitamin therapy and boost your immune system, right? Look into what prescriptions are available. If you do get stuck with COVID or you think you've been exposed to COVID, there's prescriptions out there. But people are just jumping at the, oh my God, I might die. And that's that reactive mind. And look how much our society does that versus slowing down and being educated and being proactive. What can I do? Or if people losing their jobs, what can you do to pivot or segue into something else that you really love? So we have, that's one thing we really take care of is that fear-based negative mindset that tends to rule people's lives and responses.
I do have a curious question. So the dating world changes. Now there's online dating. Well, I mean, there has always been some form of online dating, but it's more now because of the apps. What tips would you give, especially women, on during this time of like how dating is currently, on just ways to be safe and, you know, signs to look out for just to prepare?
The whole 5-module course called Success in Dating that you can find out about that on my website, RihannaMiln.com. But there's a lot of things, do's and don'ts that you must know to be successful in dating. It is an art and a science. We do use psychology, but the very first thing you got to know is you've got to love yourself first. You've got to feel amazing about your life. You have to clean up all that in the life coaching part. Then you get the skills about dating, then you go out and date. Too many people are dating unprepared. They're looking for people to save them, rescue them. They're lonely. They have bills. They have debt. Wrong time to date. You're going to get somebody who's very toxic. So when you have your life together, and what this is what we call be, what you want to attract. So don't go out there needy and desperate. When you have your life together and you're very confident, you're not going to be attracted to someone needy and desperate or has debt. You would never stand for that. So that's how our people go out dating. They have more than enough choices. People want to be in that and with them, but we are the choosers. You know, we look at, you know, do they meet my requirements, my functional needs, my emotional needs, my future goals, my current goals? You know, are they loving their career? Are they successful in their career? Someone who's miserable on their job every day is going to bring that misery home to you. So there's a lot that you look at. My clients have like 24 questions that they ask on date 1 and 2. to dive deeper into, is this person right for me? We don't care what they look like. We don't care about cute and charm. No, we're looking for the substance most often. When you find that over time, you know exactly what you're looking for. There are definitely rules, do's and don't rules for dating. And there's a lot of them, like I said, because I put a whole course around that. But dating online can be very successful when you know what you're doing. There's definitely a science to writing your profile. There's definitely a type of pictures that you should be posting online. My daughter met her husband that way on Match.com, you know, after we talked about what type of profile she needed. So did a lot of my clients. And it's so funny because I take from what they've written. Here's an example. One of my students in Colorado, she wrote a profile and she happened to be a trainer and physically into physical fitness. But all she kept getting was what we call like gym rats, not intelligent. She's a very smart girl and very successful in business. She ran 11 offices for an insurance company, her family's company. So she comes from a good family with a great future, and she has guys sleeping on her couch. No, wrong kind of guy. So, you know, I rewrote the entire profile. And not emphasizing fitness, but instead, I want smart, intelligent, successful. You know, what does she want for her future? She wanted marriage and kids. So that's what we focused on. So here's an example, you know, for the younger people I work with, 26 to 36, who want marriage and a family, struggling to find a good guy out in this sex-obsessed world. You know, everyone's there, they just want to have sex with me. I said, well, that's the worst thing you could do. The one thing that I would say, ask on your first date, are you somebody that sees yourself as wanting marriage and a family? So if they're like, yeah, I'll get married one day. And then if they don't mention kids and say, and how about kids? Well, if she wants kids, yeah, I guess so. That's a no. Okay. When my daughter asked that question, her husband said, oh, absolutely. I couldn't imagine my life not being a dad. That would feel so empty for me. As a matter of fact, I'm really dating right now to find a woman that wants the same thing. They're married and I have two grandsons, 5 and 7 from that marriage. Okay, so there are certain questions that you ask and certain answers that you accept. And again, if he was really cute and charming, but that answer was a no or a semi-no, she would have just gone on and dated someone else. So there's definite do's and don'ts when you're dating and dating smart, which we call conscious dating.
No, that's great. Because I have several single mom friends and that they've had the worst of luck with dating before COVID and somewhat trying to meet people on the apps, but that's just not working out so well. And I'm just like, man, I don't know. Because other than, you know, loving yourself and be what you want to attract, I feel like for most people, that's all, you know, that they think that's it. But there's so much more to
it. Well, the other thing is too, you don't carry on a fake relationship. A fake relationship is phone calls and texting back and forth without knowing this person. No, you don't talk to someone who's out of town. You know, they could have a whole marriage and kids in that town and they're, you know, placing themselves in Florida or whatever. And they have this whole other life in another state. No, date from your area. Know their last name before you go out. Look them up. If they're in business, find out what's the business. Drive yourself. Do not let anyone pick you up. I mean, there's many, many rules that my clients follow for their safety. And if in doubt, go without. Go without seeing them. Go without talking to them. If you gave their number and they're starting to say, send me a picture, and you send a headshot. Don't send anything sexy. You don't know who these people are. You don't know where that's going to end up. It's just like, to me, some of it's common sense, but there's a lot of rules that our people follow for dating. Those are just a few fast ones.
Right, right. And you have so many great tools for people. You have the 4 free love tests. You have your number one best-selling books, which of course will be all linked in the description. Are there any other tips that you'd like that come off at the top of your head for those that are experiencing or being triggered by childhood trauma right now during COVID and could really use some guidance?
Well, as I always say, now is the time to create the life you desire and have the love you deserve. Don't wait. Once you learn these skills, you will learn them forever. My oldest man coming into me came in at 73 years old, saying his life was over. He's going to die alone. The fourth wife divorced him. All 4 divorced him. Nobody loves me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, are you tired of being a victim? So let's get your life started now. And he's been with the same woman over 5 years. And he's every on the happiest I've ever been. but he waited to 73, or he just happened to find me at 73. So if you're not happy and you get toxic relationship after toxic relationship, this is a clear sign that your past childhood trauma has not been healed for you. So reach out, and at my website, RiannaMilne.com, I have a 1 hour life and love transformation discovery session. I give you 5 assessments, 1 hour totally focused on you. You're going to learn so much. Like people say, I learned more in one hour working with you than in 7 years of therapy. So, and all while you're on the site, do the 4 free love tests under quizzes, get the free ebook on childhood trauma, which is right on the homepage. And also in books, you get the first free 60 pages of my number one bestseller, Love Beyond Your Dreams, Break Free of Toxic Relationships to Have the Love You Deserve, and the book on mindset in life, which is Live Beyond Your Dreams, From Fear and Doubt to Personal Power, Purpose, and Success. And they're sister books. They are meant to go together to give you that mindset for life, and then the love piece will follow. So, and then my podcast, of course, Lessons in Life and Love with Coach Rihanna Milne. It's on every podcast platform, and I have about 240 educational videos and audios on my YouTube channel as well.
I love that. I seriously cannot wait to share all of this with everyone I know. And I love supporting our guests. I always snag all their books and whatever offers they have. So I'll definitely be grabbing a copy of
all of them. Thank you. Great. Please leave reviews if you get the books.
Absolutely.
Authors always like, just like podcast hosts, we love our reviews from our listeners and readers.
Definitely. Oh my gosh. Well, it's been such a pleasure, Rihanna. You have so much knowledge. And yeah. I mean, hey, like I may work with you in the future, just saying. So.
Anytime, I would love to. And you wouldn't be the first podcast host that has become one of my clients. So it was a pleasure. And I'm sure together we're going to help change the way the world loves by getting this message out to your listeners. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Love everything. All the knowledge. Oh my gosh. So everyone check out Rihanna's, all of her social medias, the website link. It will all be in the description box below. And we will catch you all next time. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you again so much for tuning in with us. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and that it inspired you to try something new holistically. Do you want to connect? Be sure to follow us on all the things, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and of course, Instagram. We also have our Podcast Insiders Facebook group, and you can find the link in the show notes or in the podcast description box. And remember to carpe diem.